Before we do the welcoming for this episode, I want to start off with a bit of a sour note, which we don't normally do on a podcast. We normally start quite strong. But I just want to say a huge apology to all of our listeners last week who didn't get their podcast on their drive to work on a Monday. This isn't because we thought your drive to work on Monday is probably not going to be there because the bank holiday. It was just a little technical error and the podcast went out on the Tuesday. It will be every single Sunday. This was just a bit of a freak accident on our side.
It was, and we hate that, don't we? We hate the when the scheduling goes wrong with the tech side of things, because we're always here. Come holiday, come sunshine, come rain? Rain or hail, we're always here doing the podcast for the listeners, Matt. So when the technical side things goes wrong, it does upset us, and so the apology said. But we're here, episode 55, another week, sun's been shining, my holiday has finally come to an end, and we're back.
Let's start off with some rants. We've been ranting quite a lot, haven't we? So I'm going to say it again because it's annoying me more and more because it's becoming more and more prominent. If you are walking down the street, get off your bloody phone. Like, how many people walk down the street looking at the phone, and then when they get to you, who would have thought there'd be someone on the path? You know, in a busy shopping center. Or last night, I went to Monday Night Raw, which tells us we're doing this on Tuesday. I went to Monday Night Raw in Birmingham. Stadium full of people, sellout, people walking around on the phone. It's like, how busy is this place? Can you not just look? Do you have to be on your phone? Get off the goddamn thing. Are you that addicted? Does this person you're messaging, do they really, really need to get this message right this second? Some people sat just flicking through Facebook. They're not even interacting with it. Get off the damn thing and look what you're doing.
I saw it the other day. There was a little TikTok that came up, and it was people at the Oasis concert flicking through TikTok or Facebook. And you're like, hang on a minute. You've paid £300-£400 to get a ticket for an event that was sold out months ago. You've gone to it, and then you're that busy, you've got to check your Facebook while you're there. It's like, what on earth are we becoming? It's scary, isn't it?
Do you know what, right? It's one of those things where, because we've lived, like, the modern generation won't know the difference. Like, if I say to someone 21, 20 years old, like, they'll just see it as normal because that's what they've grown up with. That constant need to absorb nonsense. Where we've sort of grown up in the era of going to a show and actually just being engaged with the show. I don't need to film the show. I'm going to watch it. I don't need to take pictures of it. It's going to be, if you want to take pictures, you had to take a physical camera. And because of that, we didn't bother. We just went, right, we're going to go. And do you know what? How much more do you enjoy things when you, like, if you watch something on your phone, you watch something on Netflix on your phone, and you go around the house doing a few bits, or you just sat at home. It's not the same as going to the cinema where everything's off and you just engage in that movie. And do you know what? I've got to the point where now, because we've got a cinema in Daventry now, not a massive one, just four screens, but we've got a cinema here now, and I've got to that point where I go almost every week, even if I don't care about the movie, just to have that sort of bit where I can be around people and be in a world where people aren't on their goddamn phones.
It's mad. Like, mate, I went to the Coldplay concert a couple of years ago and people on the phones, and I'm like, the worst one is recording it on your phone, because it's going to sound so good when you get home. No, it's not. Guess what, mate? It's not. And there will be a million others online. If you want to see what the concert looked like from a phone, go on YouTube 2 days later. Somebody will have videoed it. Enjoy the bloody concert. What are you doing? Put your phone away. So here's the thing. I've been on holiday, as you know. I went away with another couple to stay in a cottage. They had two kids, so their two kids and my child. And I actually made this rule, and the kids like, I was like, right, every day after tea, we're having a phone-free hour. Everybody puts their phones away, and we have to find something to do. We'll either play a game or maybe watch TV even, but we'll do something together, the two couples with the kids. And the kids were like, phones are for... I was like, right, honestly, they had the best time, Matt. We got an old board game out that we found in the cottage where we were staying. And guess what? We lost 2 or 3 hours every day no phones, and they absolutely bloody enjoyed it. So I can highly recommend that. I can highly recommend that if you've got kids during the holidays, have a phone-free hour, make them do something else. Anyway, that's our rant over. That's our old people rant over.
That's what it is now, isn't it? We feel like old moaning people. I'll tell you what, let me moan some more then. I went to the wrestling. Listen to this, right? Let's play Guess the Price. Here we go. Here's our first game for the week. The Price. The Price is not right. This isn't Bruce's Price is Right. This is Matt's Price is Wrong. So here we go. I add hot dog with onions, with ketchup and mayo. Very British thing to do. Tommy had a double cheeseburger. Not big. These aren't big. You know, these aren't big. These are just like standard sizes. Guess the price.
So I'm thinking at a stadium, it's going to be more. So I'm thinking £8 for the hot dog and a tenner for the cheeseburger. I'm going to go £18.
$21.95. Okay, let's keep going.
Was the hot dog like 2 foot long? No,
I expected like a year's supply of hot dogs for that. So, next, guess the price. 2 buckets of large popcorn. For those audio listeners, I'm air quoting. The large popcorn was about the size of a cinema small. Popcorn, ooh, one of the cheapest things to make.
Oh, mate, that can't... 2 small popcorns? I mean, even... ridiculous price. It can't be more than £13, £14
for 2 popcorns.
Yeah,
it was £18. Okay, you can see where we're going with this, right? Guess the price. I had a bag of Milky Buttons. Tommy had a bag of Milky Buttons. You know, just a standard £1 bag that you get from the corner shop. Guess the price.
Fiver for the 2.
£4.85. So that one's a bit cheaper. Oh. One's a bit cheaper. Okay. A standard 500 milliliter, half a liter bottle of, I had lemonade, sugar-free, remember? So we're not even talking sugar tax. Yeah. Tommy had a sugar-free Tango orange.
So a 500 mil bottle that are, but they're about £1 in the shops. They're a little bit more now.
A bit more now, yeah.
About 125. So they're going to be £3 each, aren't they?
£4.80.
Each?
Each.
Each.
We got
a tenner for 2 bottles of me.
We got absolutely battered. Absolutely battered. Right, here's the next thing, right? So we weren't going to go originally. Like, we was going to go to Paris, but as you know, he had the operation not too long ago, still recovering from that. So I was worried we're not going to get insurance, travel insurance. I don't want to go to another country when he's had an operation recently without travel insurance. So I didn't do it. So we go, right, we'll book tickets late, we'll go. And tickets was about between £200 and £500. But because it was getting late to the show, I booked them at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So I booked the tickets 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I got them at a good deal of £122 each. Good deal, yeah. £122 each a ticket. Guess the booking fee that they charged me to transfer the tickets from the original person who couldn't go to me.
Oh, so you bought them on like Ticketmaster or something? It's like a resale site.
Yeah, yeah. It's like Viago or Viago or something.
So I'm thinking 10%, maybe, is it? So a tenner each or something?
So one of the fees was £10, yes.
Okay.
Each. But there was also a processing fee.
Processing, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, processing fee for this automatic website that does everything.
Yeah.
And that per ticket, £51.
You are joking.
So it cost me £61 a ticket in booking and processing fees, 50% of the price of the ticket on top in processing fees per ticket. Paid £122 in ticket processing fees.
Oh, my God.
For them to send me an email to download something onto my Apple wallet.
Yeah, they won't have even, I was just going to say, they won't have even sent you the tickets, would they? They'll have just emailed them you.
Email them.
Wow.
Goes onto my Apple wallet.
Wow. I've got to say, I mean, while you're talking about that, that's the one thing that drives me mad about, like, cinema. if you want a ticket, you got to buy it online now. You can't just turn up at the cinema because you go, oh, no, we're full, or no, there's nothing, you've only got row Z. So you book it online and there's a booking fee. Yeah. Like, why can't you just include it in the price of the ticket and then I'm not going to be pissed off?
Well, they kind of have already. And then they do it again. This is we're 10 minutes in. We haven't even mentioned darts yet.
Yeah,
yeah. I saw that thing in the comments where people went, I'm here to talk about chairs, wrestling, golf, and you know, eventually we'll talk about darts. It's that, isn't it? But it's that where it is included, because when, if you was to say that cinema ticket of £10, could you give me the breakdown of how you came to 10? Because it's not like we work in industry. Mm. There's a mathematics behind that pen. Is a pound. Why is that pen a pound? And there'll be maths behind it that work out what makes that pen a pound. It's because of that bit, that bit, that bit, that bit. So they'll be working out, so that will be, well, we've got to pay for the venue, we've got to pay for the cleaning, we've got to pay for the person that, and then they put the booking fee on top, so they charge you twice. It's like those cheeky buggers at the restaurant who go, oh, well, here's your service fee, and then on the card, do you want to give a tip?
I've paid
you for your service tip, and now you want another tip? You want to pay three times for you to bring me a drink from there to there? Go to America, right. You'll be better off over there, love.
Right, anyway, we're not, just for those listening, we're not renaming the podcast Two Old Gits Have a Rant. I know it sounds like that. We're not renaming it. It is still the Mission Darts podcast. If you haven't subscribed, please do. If you like what we've just talked about, please subscribe. And if you like darts, subscribe, because we're going to get into it now. And Jeff Hardy has said, Matt, he's been searching to find about left-handed dart players that have hit 9 darters, which I thought was interesting. Matt's just dancing. I don't know why. Jeff Hardy. Oh, doesn't mean anything. Can you tell Matt hasn't seen me for 3 weeks? He's buzzing, isn't he? He's buzzing. I'll soon drag him down again. So left-handed dart players that have hit a 9 darter. James Wade. How many's he hit?
3.
11. Mickey Mansell's hit 5. All on... it says PC or ETQ. That's European Tour Qualifier, PC.
Players' Championships.
Players' Champs. Ron Mullenkamp has hit 3 Players' Champs and ETQ. These are all left-handers, by the way. I thought this was really interesting. Ryan Meikle, Mission Zone. He's hit 2. Dylan Slevin's hit 1. Kevin Sim. Are you old enough to remember Kev Sim? Hit 1 in the England Masters.
No.
You don't remember Kev Sim? Yeah, he was from around my way. Alan Tabern's hit 1 in the Vauxhall Spring something or other 2006. And Lionel Sams. Do you remember Lionel Sams? Yeah, he has hit 1 as well. Yeah, so thanks for that, Jeff. That was really interesting. Left-handers that have hit 9 darters. Very, very good. And Jeff, he's an avid listener and watcher. He couldn't just stop there, so he sent us another. And he's talking about what we talked about last week, about we were saying getting people interested in darts, and if we get a female player that's of a certain blah, blah, blah. And he's saying there's a Sarah Milkowski, apparently has her own darts and her own calendar, and only averages 61. So that kind of says the point of what we were saying. She's got where she's got because of what she's got, if you know what I mean. So that was really interesting. I want to get on to some questions because there's loads, Matt, and some will be quite in-depth, I think. So this is I've got a take on this, but I want yours. So, Chris, then this is quite a deep one, so we'll kick off with this. Chris Smith, 4946, has said, potential question for you. He wants advice for people who enjoy the game, might like to compete for fun, but really struggle in social situations. He says he's unfortunately always been very introverted. He hasn't been able to learn how to be around many other people. He's not got many friends, etc. And so the thought of going to an event like a vault is very intimidating. Now, my initial thought was, well, you've got the world of online darts these days if you want to compete. But then I thought, that's not answering his question. Could you give any sort of insight how somebody who's, you know, very introvert, very shy, might be able to overcome that?
Believe it or not, I'm very much that sort of way in terms of natural personality. Like I've worked very, very hard to get out there and do what things because I wanted to. And it's one of those where it's like, I really, really want to go do this, but there's all these issues and I just threw myself in. That's not the best advice because you chuck someone in a swimming pool, they sink or swim. You know, it's that scenario.
Yeah, it could have gone the other way for you. Yeah,
it could sink. Quite rapidly. Yeah. So it's a very, very tricky one. It is a very tricky one because essentially there is no way around it. You know, it's the cop-out answer of you've got to find a way to be comfortable in uncomfortable situations. And that goes for everybody. You know, don't think that the likes of Michael Van Gerwen don't feel anxiety, don't feel anxious. Mm-hmm. Just because they're not showing it on the outside or just because they're producing a performance doesn't mean that they're not riddled with anxiety. Look at Luke Humphries. He nearly walked away from the game because he struggled with it. He's now the world number one. So there are absolutely ways around things. The best advice I'd possibly give is keep your radius small. And by your radius, I mean what you're willing to let in at that period of time. If you keep it very small. So imagine a circle around you at all times. Now, when you're out in public, in busy places, that circle and that radius should be big because you've got to be aware of your surroundings and rooted in, which is why it annoys the life out of me when people's radius is this big in the size of a mobile phone. Like, you should be head up, looking around. You should know what's to the left of me, what's to the right, what's in front of me. You should know these things. Also, you should know what's happening down the road. You should be aware and scanning all the time to know everything that's going on in your surroundings. Nothing should be a surprise. With that, if you struggle with being in that sort of setting, the simple thing is imagine that circle around you. Just bring it in, bring it in, bring it in, bring it in. Until you get to that point. But the main thing I'd say is make sure you are engaged, not detached, because there is nothing more awkward than being detached from the moment. And that means if you're in a venue and like go to a till, go to a shopping, and if someone's doing shopping by themselves, the second they stand there and they get to the till and they're there, that awkward moment now is just phone out. I'll wait for then. Where before, if you were stood there, you would have spoken to somebody. You would have found something to engage you. I think the problem we've got a lot of the time is we're detaching ourselves from the real life situation that we don't really know how to deal with that. So what I would say is in all situations, can you stay engaged? Do you put headphones on when you go out? If you do, take them off. Listen to the world. It's not that scary. You know, but it's scary if you hide yourself from it because it's unusual. Yeah,
good advice.
So don't have headphones on. If you are that person, or I'm speculating, of course I am, I'm guessing. But if you go to a till and you get your phone out, and when you go to put your hand in your pocket to do it, just don't get my phone. All right, okay. Sit in a cafe and instead of getting your phone out or putting it on the table, put it in your pocket. These little things are little wins that will just get you used to being in that environment. Don't rely on detaching and psychologically moving somewhere else. Try and stay present for as long as possible and do this. See if you can challenge yourself to do it 5 times in a day. When you get your phone out, go, hang on, no, Matt said, let me try, and I'll just stand it. If you're in the bus queue, just stand in the bus queue. You don't have to be doing something. Just stand, look at people, say hello to somebody. Yeah. All these things will just break these little bits. And this is where you can build up where instead of going sink or swim, can we build it up to the point where I feel comfortable to go and try and apply a sport in that setting? But there will be moments where every single day you'll find a way to detach yourself from the room.
Yeah.
See if you can stay present.
Totally agree, Matt. And Peter Wright's a good example, isn't he? He's very introverted. People don't think, you know, they see him dancing on stage, the meek and the bright trousers. They think, oh, what an extrovert. He's the complete opposite, isn't he?
Yes.
He's a very shy guy.
Absolutely.
So, you know, if he can do it, anyone can. Leo Eisenhut has been on from America. This is a great point. You know, I love this. We talked a lot about steel tipping America and why we're not getting American players coming through and blah, 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 blah. And he's saying there's very few steel tip venues in the US. Soft tip is actually becoming even more popular there now than it ever was. And here's the killer. The board is bigger. The trebles and doubles are bigger. And he thinks that people get disappointed when they then play on a steel tip board and they're not as good. So they go back to soft tip. And I've thought, I've never thought of that. That is a brilliant, brilliant analogy there from Leo. And I think something we've never really discussed. Yeah, if you started on a soft tip, steel tip would feel so difficult, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It makes perfect sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Really, really interesting. I can remember being on holiday in Spain somewhere and going in and seeing a soft tip board, and they literally gave me a set behind the bar, and I was like, oh my God, I can't miss here. And like, I'm using a dodgy set of, you know, house darts, but because everything seemed bigger to me having played steel tip. That's quite interesting.
So the best thing I can say, so I've spoke to a few people like Leonard Gates, Larry Butler, Jeff Smith, Danny Baggish, people that are very, very good at that sport in America. And I say sport because I feel it's different to darts. Darts, as we know it. So pool and snooker, they look the same. They're not the same.
No.
They look the same. You've got a cue, you've got balls, you've got a table. One's just a little bit bigger than the other. The best way they described it to me, and the best way I'll always pass it on, because I can't think of a better way of exampling it, is darts, as we know, steel tip, is about what you hit. Soft tip is about what you miss. Oh. And that's the best way to example it, because I remember Adrian Gray, another player who's very, very good at the soft
tip. Yeah, Adrian, yeah.
He said to me, he goes, if you miss, you lose. If you miss once, you've lost. It's that sort of game. It's a game of perfection. If you miss once, you've lost when you play the top end people. And then it sort of really does relate to what they're saying there. It's about what you miss, not about what you hit.
Interesting. And I think I've watched very little amounts of soft tip, but what I have seen is if you're throwing first, you can kind of just go at the ball, can't you? Just score 150 every time because the ball's so big. They do a lot of that, don't they? Because the 25, what we call the 25 and the ball in America, it's the double ball or whatever it is. They you get 50 for any of that segment. So they just score 150, 150, 150, and then they take out the 51 at the end. If you're throwing second, you need to go at the treble kind of thing. So it's quite interesting, but I think a really good take there.
I've got a comment actually I like the look of.
Oh, go on.
Chris Morthone, he only put this on 2 hours ago, so you've probably not seen it yet.
No.
He put, why I agree Luke Littler is good for darts exposure coverage. However, as a fan for years, not being able to get tickets and seeing 25% of the arena leave after Luke Littler loses the first game of the Premier League was gutting. Interesting. Mm. And it's interesting for a reason that I've been talking about for quite some time. Darts has never had player appeal. Never. And I can tell you, and if you tell
do you
me
mean
now,
by that, do you mean by that people wouldn't buy a ticket to specifically watch a
yes
player?
Yeah.
Right, okay.
If you was to tell me any player right now has had player appeal, I would come up with a million different reasons as to why I think you're wrong. Because, I mean, I've been going to darts since 1997, either as a fan, as a pundit, as a commentator, or as a player. And at no point have I ever, yes, there'll be favorites, you know, oh, I watch the darts, I like this person, I like that person.
Yeah.
But never in my life have I ever seen anyone go, on Monday night at the match play, that's when Andy Cornwall's playing. We've got to get our tickets for that. It's, I want to go to the darts. The darts always been the thing. And I tell you when I really noticed this. When we came out of COVID, we went to the first day if crowds are allowed back into venues, I went to the World Match Play on the day it was all
okay.
COVID just disappeared out somewhere, you know. I went to the World Match Play. First game on was Daryl Gurney versus Ian White. Daryl Gurney hit a 180. Everyone jumps up. Hey, 180. Ian White hit one the very next throw. Everyone jumps up again. Hey, 180. And that moment opened my eyes so much because people didn't care who hit the 180. They didn't care about the context of the match. They just wanted to celebrate the 180. Hey, this is what we do. We throw the placards up in the air. We jump off of our seats. If that was football and Ronaldo scored a goal for Man United against Aston Villa, do you think the whole of the Villa side is going to jump up and go, woohoo, Ronaldo scored a goal. We love Ronaldo. What a legend. One of the legends of the sport. You're like, no, you...
Yeah.
You don't get that. It silences the crowd. And because we don't want to see it against Arsenal, no one's... We haven't had that. We've never had a match other than University Darts, which, by the way, is a mental scene. We've never had a situation where when you look at the crowd, half of them are sat down. I don't want to celebrate that 180 because he's against my man.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen.
No, that's no fair. And brilliant point. And I'll tell you what sprung straight to mind. How many sports do you buy a ticket 9 months in advance not knowing who you're going to see? So you buy the World Championship. Yeah, the World Championship sells out. And you've no idea who's going to be on that night. You've absolutely no. It could be your favorite player. It could be somebody you've never heard of. You're buying a ticket 9 months in advance and they sell out. And there's very few sports like that. Like you say, if you buy a ticket for next March for Man United, you knew who's going to be playing. And you know what team they're going to be playing. Oh, they're playing Villa. Right, okay. Or it's Newcastle, whatever. You buy a ticket for the British Open Golf. 12 months in advance, you know who's going to be there. All the best golf players in the world. Now, you're going to have to, you could maybe say, oh, well, in golf, I can watch who I want to play. I'll follow them around. Very few sports where you're paying a lot of money for a ticket, a lot of time in advance, and you might get two qualifiers that you've never heard of. And if one of them's on a 9-darter, you're going to be buzzing out your tree. You're going to be up. It's going to be so exciting.
And the second they hit a 180... reaction's the same as if Luke Littler hits a 180. And the reaction is to the dartboard. And this is where I think why Luke Littler is good for the game. Because maybe for the first time, people aren't reacting to the dartboard, they're reacting to what's on the stage. And I tell you now, as much as you think you love darts, if the only reaction we've got is to the sport, hitting a 180 is going to get boring. The darts as a sport has a shelf life. If the only thing we've got is who plays it better and what's the standard of it, because once we get to a night where you've seen 3 100 averages and then someone else goes up and does one, do you know what? I see a lot of comments from casual fans and they are absolutely right. When amateur players are hitting the 9-darters, it's not special. It's not special.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
So if now we've got a chance of turning that audience off because we've got loads of 9-darters going in, the 9-darters no longer... Yes, the 9-darters great to be there and do the thing, but then now it's got to turn to who does the 9-darter, what's the story behind the 9-darter, which is where I'm calling upon people now. We need to hear people's stories. We need to know what it means to people. That is where I think we said last week, didn't we? Did I talk about Rocky on here, I believe, when I'm like, if Rocky fights Drago, it's not interesting unless you see the training and you see everything with it. We need to see that.
Great point, Matt. Great point. I won't say I'm a big snooker fan, but I like the snooker. And when a 147 used to get made, I'd see, I must find that on YouTube. Now, every time in my feed on YouTube, somebody else has hit a 147, I don't even click it. I'm not even interested. There's that many now every week. Somebody the other day had two in a session. I'm like, oh, I'm not interested. I've seen that many 147s now. Whereas in the past, it was like, oh my God, somebody's hit a 147. I've got to watch that. So you're right. If all of a sudden we start getting 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 darters in the tournament, you're going to be like, oh, okay. Got to be careful.
When the expectation changes, when an exception becomes an expectation, You needed something different. And darts is a game that is very limited. It's not like a game of football where there's so many different variants going on the ball, off the ball, tactics, formation, shapes. It literally is two players stood at an hockey throwing with no interaction, with no communication, just trying to be individuals. So...
there you go. Somebody going past. Right, Christian's been on. Regular on the channel. He's asked me a question, which is unusual because they're usually for you. But he's kind of said, we all know what Matt does with his 25 jobs that he does all the time. What does Andy do other than what they see me doing here? And I thought, I'd actually still want to bring you into this, but just to give a little bit of a breakdown of what I do other than the YouTube, the TikTok, the podcast, everything that we do online. People will know I do the precision fittings because they'll have seen those on YouTube. That's a couple of days a week for me, Mondays and Thursdays, if anybody wants. And by the way, bookings for them have gone through the roof during the summer. So a lot of people looking for a new set of darts. Other than that, I get involved a lot at Mission with regards to new products coming out and organization of that sort of thing. I get involved with the descriptions that you'll see, replies and stuff like that online. Basically, similar to Matt in that lots and lots of different things. I do coaching as well, but mine are more specific really to Mission, whereas Matt does PDC and Sky and all that sort of stuff and commentary. Mine's more involved in being at Mission and getting involved in meetings with regards to new products and what's going to come out and how we make the company better and how we're more efficient and that sort of stuff. But I kind of wanted to bring it to you, Matt, and say, you know, because we're now getting more involved with, shall we say, sample stuff. So stuff comes through to us. Like I tested the new board, which has been on the channel a few times now. And I think this is something that you and I will get more and more involved in. I know you've always said that you're not a big equipment guy. You've never really gone down that, but you've still got an eye for it. You know, you've got an eye for new stuff. And you see, I saw a little video that you did talking about the Lava darts, which has been one of our most successful darts ever. So you've clearly got an eye, having been in the industry as long as you have, for new stuff. And I think it's quite important that you and I do have an eye on that. There's lots and lots of new stuff coming out, and I think you and I look and go, oh, that's going to be a winner. That's a winner right there.
Yeah, I say that. I always even advise this with my coaching as well, where I say I'm not an equipment guy, and I say that a lot. Now, what I do have is about 25 years of experience of using it and experimenting with it, but it's all self-taught and self-learned. That's where I say that I'm not an equipment guy, because there are people out there that study this. Now, I will happily argue with anybody about coaching, about the psychological side of it, and I will sit and I will fight my corner to the death, because I am very confident in my knowledge, my education, and everything I've got in regards to that and the application of that. So, but when it comes to equipment, I know that it's all just what I've learned myself. So I won't argue with that. I'll give my view on something. But what I can't do is I can't sit here and tell you whether it's right or wrong, because I can't honestly say that I know I am right. And I, like I said, if I'm sure of something, if I'm confident in something, yeah, I'll back myself to the hill. But I can't have that confidence. Because even though I've, like I said, played 25 years, I've gone through multiple equipment, I've gone through loads of different sitting sessions, fittings, all sorts. I've recorded, I've videoed, I've done all sorts of different bits from different angles and done lots of study on it, but I'm still not confident enough to say that my knowledge is better. And the other thing is, I've got nothing to confirm that. There's a lot of times, and I say this a lot when I used to work mentoring coaches, don't look at the amount of time you've done something as a qualification, because doing something wrong for 20 years doesn't make you an expert. It just means you've been doing something wrong for 20 years.
Yeah, And I think that's where our dynamic works, Matt, is that we are different. But although we were both, it's very easy to put us in the same. Oh, you were both PDC professionals. Yeah, okay. Matt was for like 11 years. I was one, you know, so that's very different. I'm from the equipment background. I had a darts company. You do broadcasting. It's all very different, but it's all within the darts world. And that's what makes the dynamic work. And this couldn't be a better segue, because the mediocre darts player's been on and said, I recently got a set of what could have been Matt's player darts, the Mission Celestial. However, the question is, he wants to know what our thoughts are about adding nose cones. You know, them little things that you can buy at, you know, the ones I'm talking about, that remove the lip on the start of the barrel. He's noticed a fair bit of difference between using that compared to not using that. And he wants to know our thoughts. Let's make it a bit broader. Does a narrower, so let's call it a tapered barrel, is that going to be better, worse, or the same as a non-tapered barrel, Matt? What's your thoughts? Because yours isn't tapered at all. Yours is round. Oh, he's got a set right there.
One you made, that weird looking one.
Yeah.
So it does taper. We can see here it's tapering into a little bit. Now, again, like I traveled with and work with very much so, and worked alongside for many years, a darts designer. So I picked up a lot of stuff off of him as well. And anytime you get this sort of tapered nose, it's supposed to be for better grouping because it's meant to like let the darts compact better rather than a straight barrel. So this is meant to be for better grouping. Now, this does actually have a flat nose on the end there.
Yeah. So, have you got your dart handy? Because yours is round, isn't it? In the board?
Yeah.
Just take one out of the treble, Matt. They'll all be in there. Show us the difference.
Yeah, mine's round. Still a little bit flat on the front. Yeah. And that's what it's talking about, isn't it? That cone that just smooths it out. So it looks a little bit more like, let's say, I know the lava's like that as well. It's just more aggressive on the taper.
Yeah. That's what I would call an aggressive taper. That's going very narrow, isn't it? At the point that joins the point rather than yours.
Yeah.
So is that going to be an advantage? We know why the manufacturers would say, oh, this is better for grouping. So then your question will be, well, why aren't they all like that?
Well, it changes the balance, doesn't it?
Hmm.
Because if there's less equipment here than there is here, the balance point's going to be very different. But this is just the interesting thing. This is one of the really interesting things with darts, because we spoke about this. We've done a video on it. It might not have been on YouTube yet. I think it's on TikTok, where we talked about, like, this is the Celestial, right? And the Celestial comes in 21, 23, and 25, for example, just because they're what the Matt Edgar darts come in. I thought I'd just use the same, because these are the Matt Edgar darts that come in 21, 23, and 25. Look at the lovely coating on them as well. So so let's say that dart. Now, a lot of the time, the dimensions are the same, like the length's the same, the thickness is the same. How can that be 4 grams heavier than that dart? Let's just say
they take some of the tungsten out from inside.
So just remember as well, balance points change. So when you tinker with things, it doesn't stay the same. The dart's not the same. It has to be different, because again, I worked with a designer for a while, and it's people would say to him, right, I want the Matt Edgar dart, but I want it in 29 grams because his darts are too light. And he goes, well, I can't just add 4 grams to it. I've got to make it thicker. I've got to make it longer. I need to put something on it. I can't just make it heavier. Yes, you can tinker with tungsten percentage, but that's not going to change.
It's a big rabbit hole, this, Matt, because there's lots of things. You can, as you'll see with that dart that we did, we added a flight protector. That affects the balance. If you're going to add a nose cone, which is the initial question, that's going to affect the balance at the front of the dart. You know, if you make the barrel longer. In the olden days, people used to go, oh, I wonder what a heavier dart would be. Oh, use these adagrams, mate. And they used to, you've seen them, they screw into the... that changes everything. You can't just add a gram and go, oh, yeah, I need a heavier dart. Yeah, but hang on a minute. You've added a gram, but you've also added like 2 centimeters to the length of your barrel. You can't just do that. So there's a lot. The minute you start adding things or taking it away, as you've shown with the flight that you're using now, that is taking away from a normal balanced dart. It's going to change things, and expect it to change things. So there is no answer where Matt and I can say adding one of those nose cones is better or worse. We can't give a yes or no, because it's going to affect the balance of your dart, and that might be better for you or it might not.
Okay, so I'm going to do something that I do with all my coaching clients that want to talk about equipment with me.
Okay.
Again, I stick to what I know and what I'm good at. I never try and advise on things I'm not 100% on. So if I've got 4 darts, this is purely for the visual listeners, I'm guessing here, but I'll explain it best I can for you audios. So if I've got 4 darts here, 4 very different darts, we've got the Matt Edgar in 21, even though it does come in 23 and 25.
I thought you were going to test me what they were then, and I know what they are.
We've got the Celestial, the Dodeca, and what looks like Mr. Hankey, but with...
No, it's not. It's... Oh, God. See, I've been on holiday for 3 weeks. Oh, Andy, why can you not remember what that dies? Carry on, and I'll know what it is.
Right. It'll now, the balance point on these darts are very different. And this is where Andy comes in, by the way. This is where Andy's job comes fully into effect. So if you find this is you, you'll find Andy is a good suit for you. Like the service he provides. If this isn't you, I would say it's not as strong of a service as if this relates with you very much so. So let's say, for example, I ask a client to take this dart, the Matt Edgar in 23s, even though it's available in 21, 25, right? And I say, grip that dart. And they grip the dart like this. And they go, right, my thumb's here. And I always put my finger on the back here where the stem is. Right, that's how I grip the dart. I go, right, okay. And then I give them this dart, the Mike Dodeca dart, which is much longer. And they go, well, I always put my finger on the stem, at the back of the stem, so my thumb will go about here. Right, now, with that, your thumb on this dart is on the balance point, and here it's behind the balance point. So when you throw that dart, you're going to get 2 completely different results. If you grip not to the balance point, if you grip to the pattern, if you grip to the dimensions, like the length of it, the back of it, if you grip on the, if you go, I always grip on the front, I always grip here. If you do not change your grip to suit the dart, Andy provides a service that suits you perfectly. If like me, who Andy says all the time, I can throw everything. That's because if I pick this dart up, the first thing I do is this. I go, right. Yeah. And I'm feeling for where the balance point is, and I adjust my grip so I throw every single dart the same. And it doesn't matter what dart I throw. Within 9 darts, I can throw it because I'm replicating my throw to the equipment. I'm adjusting. If you can't adjust to the equipment, there's a set of darts out there for you, and that's where Andy comes in.
Yeah, and it's interesting because you just showed that it's called the Saturn dart, by the way, though. I just remembered the one with the it's called Saturn. Yeah, people will go, oh, I always grip the dart at the back. I'm like, all right, how long are your darts? Oh, they're here, mate. I've got them here. All right, okay, yeah, sort of medium length. And then I give them a Mike Dodeca and I go, well, where are you going to grip that? And they go, oh, I'm going to grip it at the back because that's where I always grip. Yeah, but that's now exactly what you just said. That you can't just go, I'll grip every dart at the back until I find one. Do you know what I mean? You do need to adjust to the balance point. So that's really, really key, Matt. That's interesting. Yeah. We haven't talked about, people are going to be listening to this going, there's been 2 players' championships this week. And we'll be like, well, actually, there was only one before we recorded this. But there could have been a massive story. And it kind of feels like, well, why are you talking about it if it's not a massive story? Because Beau Greaves and Luke Littler went head-to-head. And it was a little 6-5 game to Mr. Littler. Now, had that gone the other way, would that have hit all the papers tomorrow, Matt?
No.
You not think it's big enough because it's a Pro Tour? It needs to be a TV event.
Yeah. I think it may have because it's Luke and they get views out of Luke. But what we did get, I think we've got confirmation of my assumption that Beau Greaves is going to Ali Pali. I think she's going to play the Pro Tours now for the back end of the year where she can. The fact she beat Barneveld is good, who I think, by the way, is is a real crossroads now. I think Barneveld was trying to transition into the seniors, but now the seniors is gone. Mm. Like, what does he do? Because I don't think he's got the game right now to get where he wants to be.
No, he's still got a top 40-50 game, hasn't he? But that's not where he wants to be, is it? It's when you've been the best, you don't want to be. It's similar at all levels. You've been in the top 50 of the world. Do you want to go and start playing pub night on a Monday again?
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know what I mean? You just don't, do you? But funnily enough, people ask me that all the time. Sure, they ask you, oh, do you still play? Do you still play? Do you still get? I'm like, no, because I can't replicate the level I was at. And I find it really frustrating to not be able to do that. One thing that worried me, Matt, she's 20 years old now. She both 20, 21, something like that. She previously played 4 women's events. Now, she won all 4 the 2 days before, didn't she? She won all 4 again, and then came onto the players and said, "I'm exhausted. I'm gone. I've got nothing left. That's not enough stamina for me, Matt. I know it's hard. I've been there, done it. It's mentally draining. But she's 21. She's not. I'm 54. You know, she's not. If she's mentally gone after 2 days, of playing best of 11s, best of 9. Are they best of 9s on the ladies, best of 11s? I just worried me a little bit. I just thought she needs to up her stamina a bit more.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the direction darts is going in general, though. And, we're due the calendar announcement soon. I'm informed there's going to be extra dates on there. There's going to be some changes. For the Premier League boys as well, there's going to be more travelling. You'll see what I mean. I can't obviously say at the moment, but even things that look quite localized and look quite reasonable are going to be changing because they're not going to be that anymore. And there's one significant one that you'll notice, which goes from like a 30-minute travel to like a 2.5 hour through the night travel. There's going to be some changes and things coming up soon, which is going to make things more challenging. But as always, it's an option. You don't have to do everything. It just gives you the option to do. So I think now we're going to see diaries manage better.
Does darts, we spoke about this last week, does darts ever get big enough for a world tour, Matt? Does it ever get to the point where they go, right, lads, the 2 weeks in July, that's New Zealand and Australia. There's 4 pro tours and there's a big tournament at the end of the week. And if you're not there, you're losing points.
I think we'll get to a point where we have an actual system in place. The CDC is an affiliate tour. You've got affiliate tours in Asia. You've got affiliate tours in Australia. I think we'll get to a point where there is a pyramid system. Because at the moment, where does the CDC relate in regards to the challenge tour? Which one's bigger? Because actually, you can get in the Grand Slam, you can get in the World Championships. It's the same as the challenge tour. Are they on par, or is the challenge tour bigger? Because don't think about
the standard. Yeah,
don't think about the standard. Ignore the standard. Ignore the players and the names and the reputation that are entering it. It's the reward you get out of it that we're judging on where it is, because it doesn't matter what the standard is of the FA Cup qualifying round 5. The FA Cup qualifying round 5 is the same whether it's Edgar Football Club versus Andy Cornwall Football Club, or whether it's 2 really good established clubs that have got history that are trying to get in the main FA Cup. I don't think the standard's what we judge it by. What we judge it by is the reward of what you get from it. If this is a pathway to the World Championships and you get 1 ticket each, for example, they're on par. It doesn't matter if one is played in the local pub and one is played on a world tour. If the reward's the same, they're on par. The standard shouldn't differentiate it. It's like the word professional. When people go, oh, he's a semi-professional. No, you mean he's quite good at it, but he's not good enough to make money. There's no such thing as a semi-professional.
No, there isn't. No.
You're either a professional where you earn your money from it, or you're not.
Yeah.
What is a semi-professional? Like, no. You know, nonsense. So, just means he's good at darts. But yeah, so I think we'll get to a point where we go, right, there's a system. Pro Tour here. Then it's Challenge Tour. Then it's affiliate tours where you've got this one, this one, this one, this one. But I think when we get there, I think that's where things will get interesting. I think with the World Championships, the way it is with 128 players now, I think it'll eventually get to that point where the days of qualifiers are going to be gone and they're all going to go to affiliate tours and systems. But I think the PDC will basically, it will basically be, instead of CDC, for example, I think it'll be PDC America, Canada, PDC, PDC there.
It's funny because I've always thought that. Why do we have a World Championship qualifier? You've had all year. You've had all year to play well in the Pro Tours and qualify. That's your way in. You do well in the Pro Tours, Players' Championships, you get in the World Championship. Why is there then another qualification? Oh, you weren't good enough to do that, mate, so here's another go.
I like it when there is that spot, but not maybe as many as there are now. Now, the reason I like that is purely because it gives us a chance to go with the PDC. You get your tour card in January. You're playing county darts. You've not had a tour card before. You're playing county for Lancashire. You know, you're a decent player. You get your tour card. And you've gone from being... Well, I can't think of a team off the top of my head now. You've gone from being Dagenham and Redbridge to going, boom, you're now playing Manchester City. The jump is massive. The Pro Tour is played in a seeded system where the top 32 players are seeded, and you ain't going further than one round without being able to play them. You might get past it in round one, you're getting them in round two. So because of that, I like the idea of there being a qualifier where we go, okay, the seeds are gone now. Who's the best of you lot who's not seeded? Seeds are gone, they're through. Mm. Your top players off the Pro Tour are through. Right, who's going to stand up and take this opportunity? Who is the best non-seeded player right now within the PDC? You're getting a World Championship spot. I like that. What I don't like is when there's six spots or loads, because that just feels like we've gone beyond who's the best, and it now turns into who's going to have that fortunate day where they just pick up a couple of wins.
Would you like to see an amateur qualifier, Matt? Would you like to see a spot for the best amateur in the country? Not that that would be easy to, there would have to be a knockout or whatever, but
100%.
I think that'd be interesting.
But I would like it, and I'd like this as well for the UK Open. I want to see qualifiers where, if you're on the Challenge Tour, you can't enter. You've got your opportunity to qualify through the Challenge Tour. You go to Q School, you become a PDPA member, not allowed. This is a qualifier for non-PDPA members. I'd love to see that. And I think that would be better because, I mean, look at the UK Open qualifiers. Hmm? It was basically just the Challenge Tour day three. It was just another day of Challenge Tour with a couple of extra players who entered. You know, so I'm not keen on that. I think you've got to be careful that you're not just dipping into the same pool of players. And I'd like to see something away from that pool of players. You know, the Challenge Tour players now, they've got more opportunities for World Championship spots than ever before. You've obviously got the chance, if you're high up, to get call-ups to the Pro Tour, earn money that way to get yourselves into the Players Championship in the world. And I think the second you go there, the idea is you're going there to be a professional player. So you, by your own admission, because you've paid the fee and you filled out the paperwork, you're saying, I'm to the level of being a professional player. We know everyone goes for that reason, but that's the reason you should be going. And if you're going for that reason, I think you exempt yourself from things like that one-spot qualifier where we have an amateur qualifier. Absolutely.
Hmm. Yeah, interesting. And be great to see an amateur player come through, do really well, and then potentially, who knows, does that person get a Pro Tour spot? Or I don't know. But yeah, I think there's food for thought there. Going back to Bo, how long do we have to wait until she has to confirm whether she is playing? Because right now we don't know.
I think she might already have done it.
Do you think so?
I think that might already have happened.
Okay. I hope so.
We won't find out about it, and we won't find out about it for a long time. But I think she probably already has. I think she already did the second she signed that manufacturer's deal. I think that was the moment where I think it was already agreed at that point.
And one part of me wants to say, I hope she, and this is not disrespectful to anybody, I hope she gets an easy-ish draw. But then the other half of me goes, I hope she draws Luke Littler. I'm kind of on the, I don't really know which way I want it to. I'm kind of thinking, does she get a qualifier, or does she get a player ranked 90th in the world where she's got an opportunity to win 2-3 games on TV and it grows the sport? Or does she get Luke Humphries, Luke Littler first round and it's a classic? And you know what I mean? So I'm kind of, I don't really know which way I want it to go.
Okay. Let me ask you a question then. Put your mission hat on here. Okay. And all I want is a yes or no answer.
Okay.
We know the financial terms of the contract of which has been signed. We know that. Yep. We're not going to say it, but we know it, which is a good deal, very good deal. If you had signed a player on that deal and they had the choice to go Ali Pali or Lakeside, do you leave it to their choice and say you can pick and do what you want? Or do you say, if you're taking this deal, you are going to Ali Pali?
Yeah, you take the, you say that you're going to Ali Pali.
Yeah, I'd do the same. There is no way I'd be offering the money that she's been given.
Agree.
And saying, you can go Lakeside if you want.
Agree.
It's not happening. Not happening. So yeah, I did a video actually. Five things I think is going to happen this year. That was one of them. Beau Greaves goes there. I left Luke Littler out from going number one in the world. I'm trying to remember the other things I said now.
Oh, which, by the way, we spoke about the other day. Has to happen now, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's almost inevitable.
Luke Littler has to be world number one at some point, regardless of what Humphries does now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, go on. Your five right. things I interrupted.
Okay, anyway, we've got the true or false. We've got the true or false game, which we need to build up ready for when we do our player filming in a few weeks' time. So we'll do it again. We said we're going to build it up, get people used to it. So here we go. Here we go. My true or false scenario. Last night, whilst watching the wrestling, I felt like I really, really needed to go to the toilet, to the point where I sort of let a bit of wind out and it came a little bit close to touching cloth. So I was like, right, I'm going to go to the toilet to make sure this is safe. And as I was shuffling past people, I was like struggling to hold it in. So I was silently letting them go into people's faces as I was shuffling out. Is that true or is that false?
That's true, Matthew Edgar, because I know what you're like.
Now, again, this is where Andy just jumps in. He doesn't ask the questions. He doesn't interrogate. It's actually false. It's actually false.
Is it false?
Yeah, yeah. Because if you're an interrogator, this is where the rules come in. If you're interrogated, what happens at stadiums? Do people stand up, don't they? So you can't. They won't sit down and you shuffle past them. They stand up and you walk out. You see? That's where you could have asked questions, but you didn't. You jumped in there, jumped in all guns blazing, got it wrong.
Actually go to the toilet, or did you hold it in until like the end of the bout or something?
No.
You didn't need to go.
No,
that was just totally fabricated, made up. Very good. Very, very good. How long is a wrestling evening then when you go?
Last night it started at 7:30 and we got out of there about, I think I was in my car at about 11:00. So it's quite a long time.
That's like 3.5 hours. So you get a bit of your money's worth, don't you? I mean, you can pay £122 to go and watch Arsenal, I think, or Chelsea. If you only get 90 minutes there, don't you? But you don't get a £60 booking fee on top. I can't believe that. That's absolutely done me, that.
Andy, I've done it again. So Andy's, I keep saying, like, he's got me spending. Not only did I go spend a load yesterday, I've bought a Thunder Megazord. I've bought a Nintendo 64. I bought a SNES. I've bought a PSP. I've bought a 2 terabyte. I've bought Oh yeah, I'll show. I'll send you pictures when they arrive. What else? But I bought a legacy Falcon Zord. I bought some diecast coins. Like this past week.
All I can say is it's all or nothing with you, isn't it? It's either I'm not spending a penny, or I'm just going to buy everything in the world this week. It's all or nothing, Matt, isn't it? It's all or nothing. Everything and yet you still won't pay 30 quid for a steak. It just blows my mind. Blows my mind. Like, buy a new top, buy a new T-shirt, you know, from Boss. Imagine Matthew Edgar goes into Hugo Boss and there's a polo shirt for £100. What would your reaction be? I'm like, Matt, that suits you, that, mate. You're going to get a lot of wear out of that.
I would never.
Out of 100, what is the chance of you actually buying it?
Never. For £100, I would expect, like, I'm not even joking when I say this, I would expect, like, a full suitcase full of clothes for 100 quid. I'm not even joking. Like, the T-shirt I'm wearing now cost me £2.50. Meanwhile, I've just spent £1.50.
Yeah, I'm a wrestling figure a in a box door. That's going to go in a wardrobe somewhere that you're never even going to look at.
Yeah.
It's like, it's weird, isn't it? Yeah. It's weird. People are weird. I would never. I'm not into toys, so I would. I mean, I quite like gaming, but I don't want a Mega Drive. I want a PS5. I don't. But yeah, I would buy a top for 100 quid. It's weird, isn't it? How people are different. But you are definitely all or nothing at the moment. It's either I'm not spending this month, or it's like, yeah, I bought another three things. I'm like, Mike, you bought three yesterday. What are you doing?
I know.
And the trouble is, knowing that you've bought a PSP, you're now going to be going, oh yeah, I bought five PSP game retro games. That's you can't stop now.
Right. You think you're joking?
Right. No, I'm not.
God's honest truth, right? I have bought five PSP games, exactly five. Exactly five.
That's unbelievable. Oh dear. So guys, if you've got any old stuff at home, any old toys that you want to sell, if you put them on eBay, the chances are the very man on this screen will be buying them from you.
Just message me on social media. If you've got games, toys, anything like that, message me. I'll happily get them.
Matt. It's been a pleasure as always. I don't know where the last hour's gone, but it's gone. We will try and make sure this goes out for all our audio listeners on time, Sunday night. We'll make sure it's there, guys. Sorry for last week. Please make sure you're subscribed. We're noticing loads of people watching every week that aren't subscribed, so please make sure you are. It helps us make the podcast better. And thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.